one shot at a time.
Welcome back to the Enjoy the Walk podcast, live from Dante's back porch. We got a taste of the running deer today, man.
Yes, we did a full taste too.
It was fun. It was hot today for a change.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you got out of your place, came up from Salisbury, Maryland, and same here. It was about low 60s with a nice cool breeze. It felt nice. A little chilly. Might need like a little pullover or whatnot. 3 hours later, it's scorching hot out.
Well, I tell you, it was humid, and I sweated more than I have, I think, yet this year, which was it was a good feeling. You know, the Miller Lights flowed early and often today with keeping me hydrated out there. But yeah, man, it was fun to finally be at your home course.
Yeah, it's fun to get some, especially some Marywood guys down here, finally playing. The home track that I always keep telling everybody about. So you got to get down here. You got to get down here. You got to play it. It's a treat. It'll test you. I know the greens are massive, pretty undulated. Yeah, it was very green. Of course, it's in great shape.
Those green complexes, man, they blew my mind today. If people don't know Running Deer or have never been there, you're in for either a enormous test of your putting game early and often. Or maybe you'll navigate them well. I don't know. I don't think many people can navigate that place extremely well the first time around. Those greens are massive.
Nah, and a lot of the times you think, you know, let me go play this one course I've never played before. Let me just aim my drive, try and aim it down the middle, find the 150 stick, have 150 stick, aim for the middle of the green. Let me tell you this. When you play at Running Deer, you can aim at the middle of the green, but depending on the pin location, you could be 3-putt easily. Because that's how large they are. You have to break down, depending on where the pins are at, on Running Deer's greens, you have to break down the greens in 4 different quadrants and kind of play smaller greens within that green and the greens there, because that's how big they are.
Yeah, you simply cannot, on any green, I don't think there was one green today on all 18 holes where you can sit back and say, yeah, let me just fire at the middle and let it be safe, because some of the middle of the greens can filter off 20, 30 feet, and then you're in 3-putt territory real quick. 100%.
3 putts, if you don't flag hunt or, you know, put it in the right spot on the green where the flag stick is located, a 3-putt is almost a guarantee at Running Deer. You will 3-putt once, at least. I can guarantee you, you will have a 3-putt on the card.
I got twice today, yeah, with the old 3-putts.
And now we're not talking putt just came up short, lip out. We're talking full-fledged putts.
Yeah.
You're talking like 100-footer, trying to get down to 15 feet to maybe, you know, you hammer it a little bit or come up short. Now you have a 3-footer. Like, you have some knee knockers.
Yeah, and not even 3-footers. I mean, the greens weren't, you know, overly fast today. And I still had some 6-7-footers coming back because of just the way it broke. And some of these pin positions today were diabolical. Yeah, and if you're in the wrong spot, you're destined for doom.
I'll tell you what, the super likes to play some tricks on the members too a lot. He likes to mess with your head, especially putting some tough locations. But yeah, same thing. They were a little on the slower side, probably because of the heat, which is understandable. They were really green. They rolled pretty good. But yeah, you can have that one putt where you got to get it up this little ridge or a little bump, but where the pin was at, you know, if you missed, you're coming down 8-10 feet.
It was fun. I'll say that. You really had to focus on, you know, your approach shots. You had to focus on, you know, where you wanted your tee ball to be at the right angle for your approach shots. It's a test of a golf course, and I can see why they host some qualifiers for, you know, US Open qualifiers and stuff like that. It was a great course. Your first time playing from the tips.
It was
all the way back.
It was usually the group I play with. Usually play from the whites or the blues, and we decided we're going to tip it out today. And I've never played from the tips. And let me tell you this, completely different golf course.
I love how that, you know, we talked about it before we even got on the course because we knew we were going to tip it out before we got there, about how just even courses in my area down on the Eastern Shore, going from the blues to the blacks completely changes the course setup. And that was so true today. You know, now granted, I don't know what the course setup is like from the blue tees, but you said it was night and day from the blues to the blacks.
There's a few holes where it's really night and day because just for how, like, it can be maybe 50 yards back or just a couple yards back. Not even much, but you'll have such a different point of view and like a different horizon where the trouble that you do see, you don't see.
Yeah.
So you just get driver and you just rip it out there. And I have a strategy. I have my own strategy when I play the whites with our weekend guys. We call ourselves the Hack Brigade. It's a great group of guys. It's a lot of fun. Always some good money games going on. And I have a strategy where I'm not using driver every hole. You step back a couple tees, I'm pulling driver, but I feel comfortable pulling driver too because the landing area just looks so much wider. It's just a different view. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe two times today we were forced to hit iron off the tee. 11 is one that comes to mind. You know, and I really can't think of any other hole that, you know, you needed to hit a lighter club off the back tees. I think, you know, you let yourself hit driver from all the way back.
11 or 15 are your you need to hit a nice little low stinger or just a little straight, you know, 3-iron hybrid, maybe a 3-wood. Those are the two holes where you actually have to place your tee shot. Everywhere else you do have room to work with, but I mean, listen, we're in the sticks and kind of the pines of New Jersey, and when a lot of people think New Jersey, they think North Jersey, right outside of New York.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of New Jersey, I think South Jersey, outside of Philly, but also well closer to the shore and of Atlantic City. I mean, it is some pine barren areas, and we were in the true sticks of New Jersey.
Boy, I tell you, my drive here today showed me how country New Jersey can be. I drove through cow pastures and fields, and like I told you here, I drove through the rodeo on the way up here. I got the full experience of rural New Jersey, and it was pretty cool seeing here. But speaking of money matches, we had ourselves a fun day with two, I think, of Running Deer's, you know, elite players, I would say. Steve Barry, we've had him on the show before, S-Dot Putters, and Club Champ Andy. It was fun, man. Andy K.
Yeah,
those guys are a class act, man. I really enjoyed it out there with them today.
He can throw some jabs at
8-7. 8-7. He posted before we even got there. The man didn't even let us on the property, and he was chirping us.
Yeah, we were walking up to the range, and he was chirping.
I love it.
No, it's a lot of fun because it was definitely a true test for golf too. Because, you know, apparently USGA thinks I'm sandbagging right now, but I got soft stepped by them with my handicap posting. But I'm telling you now. Honest man here, I just was not playing that well. And, of course, I come out and shoot lights out from the tips. But it's a true test when you play guys like that. And Andy won the club championship last year, and the previous year Steve won. So, I mean, you got two guys who know this course like the back of their hand, and they're some phenomenal golfers, and they play a lot of local AM stuff. They're always doing two-man stuff, so they know each other's game. You and I are just getting to know each other's game. You never played the course, and I never played the course in the tips. So we're going in truly as underdogs.
And now I'm not knocking your experience out there, but your forecaddying needs a little work. I'm not gonna recommend you for a forecaddying job here in the near future.
I know. It's funny. I mean, there's times where, you know, I was on the right side of the fairway, and Dalton's down there. I remember it was on 17. He was actually about 200 yards out, par 5. Somehow thought he was 240. Well, let's just say it was all in my hands after that. Steve is chirping at me. He is a way to caddy for your partner. I was just kind of a blue.
Now, to defend you and save your butt on that, though, you did know where my ball landed after I yanked it 240, yep, and we found it.
I could have sworn.
It
came down. It must have hit something, and then I saw it kick hard left, and it landed in the fescue around the bunker. And I was like, I could have sworn it went in that area. And everybody's like, I'm pretty sure it's a lot further. I was like, no, I saw something kick out right there. And lo and behold,
there it was. Unfortunately, there it was, because I took two hacks at it, didn't get it out. And thankfully, you ran the birdie putt in. So, you know, closed the match out, actually.
Yeah, I closed the match out.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
I tell you, it's pretty sweet to take money from the hometown guys, I have to say.
I know that will be the talk of the town. do have some text messages already from some guys. Word spread that fast. But it was a test. It was a test for me. But it was a lot of fun.
Man, I truly enjoyed it. And, you know, it's just like, it's fun. Like you said, you know, you get out with those kind of players and in a tight match, we weren't any farther than one away from each other all day long. It was, we were one up. And then after four, they squared it up. And after five, they took the lead. And then it was within one the rest of the day.
It took this 16 for us to go two up.
Yep.
Because you made that birdie.
Yep.
And then we closed it out on 17, 2-1. And that was that. I mean, that was the only, I guess, runaway with it. But, I mean, we were pretty much finished.
Yeah, it was.
And then they pressed.
I always love matches like that because it's like it brings out the better golfer in you. I mean, I know, heck, not even a week ago, you were telling me you wanted to sell the clubs. You were thinking about hanging it up. The game frustrated you that well.
Oh, yeah. I was taking pictures of my clubs about to post them on eBay. They were literally all I had to do was just hit click, and they were on. For sale, but you know, something just said, actually Dalton pretty much goes, so where are you playing tomorrow?
I was like, now don't be crazy, make a tee time for tomorrow and go play this damn game, because I think we've all been there. If anyone has played this game for long enough, you've either broken a club because you hate the game so much, or you've thought about selling the sticks because you've just had enough.
Or if you have stand bags like I do, the stands are a little crooked,
little to the right leaning, I think.
I don't even know.
But I think it just goes back to, you know, when you play with better players, whether you have the opportunity to within your own little group or not, to play with better players always brings out the better player in you. And I think that was true today. You know, you hadn't broken 80 yet this year, right?
No.
Or you had 80, maybe once or twice.
I've broken 80, well, not including today, about two or three times. And, but, I mean, I was on this stretch. I mean, when golf came back to New Jersey from COVID, where they, you know, uplifted some of the restrictions, we were back at it, but it wasn't the golf we know.
Mm-hmm.
We know, like, you get there maybe a half an hour to an hour earlier, you get a nice warm up in, you hit the range, you hit some putts, you get a feel for the greens, you get loose, you know, you're ready to go, you're talking to your guys, you're chirping, you're just shooting the shit. Well, now. And when this happened, it was you show up 10 minutes, you park, you check in, and you go right to the first tee, and you're coming in cold. And I'm telling you, I mean, the first three rounds, one of the rounds was a 92. And I said, whoa, what's going on? And then I started playing more, and I just, for some reason, it was just stuck at 82 or 81.
Yep.
And it was just frustrating the crap out of me until I finally kind of broke here and there, got maybe 79, 77, and then – you know, yesterday I played one of our other tracks, Blue Heron Pines, down in Egg Harbor Township with my dad. Played from the blues, 77. Texted Dalton, I'm back.
I got that I'm back text, baby. I said, I've been waiting for that. I've been waiting for that from you.
And then we had our class with Colby Wallace on our first class for the mental mm-hmm. side of the game, which actually I took a lot out of that first class. I took a lot of pointers out of there. But for something, you know, I guess I got mentally prepared for today because I knew I was going in and I could not make a mistake, especially with my handicap. I mean, it went up 3 points.
Well, let's talk about that real quick before we get into how that kind of affected us on the front and didn't on the back. You said you were struggling, obviously, and your handicap went up, and then they soft-stepped you. For those people who don't know, what the heck is soft-stepping, and how did you become a soft-stepper?
USGA thinks you're sandbagging. So if you have to, as Steve was saying, busting my chops there, he was saying that you have to Google it. They just tell you that it's soft step. So if you go onto the GIN app where you post your scores, my lowest handicap and what I started with 2020 was a 4.5. So certain tees it came out to a 3 and went up to a 5. So I was in between a 3 and a 5,
mm-hmm.
depending on what tees I was playing. Anyway, all of a sudden, I'm not playing great golf, and my handicap index goes from a 4.5 to a 7.6.
Whew.
In less than a month. So now, with that being said, the USGA is like, hold up, what's going on here? this isn't right. A person's handicap, based on that, based on the statistics and the caliber of that player, he should not be he should not be shooting those scores mm-hmm. and having such a high. So what they think, you're probably sandbagging, kind of boosting your stats a little bit to help for money matches down the road or whatnot, which technically no one likes a sandbag. Anyway, so after
ever.
Soft step basically says if your handicap goes up 3 points within 12 months, they soft step it. So the impact per round that you post is lessened to about half of it mm-hmm. what it normally is for, say, if you shoot a 77 or whatever the point differential, however they do the calculation on the back end, mm-hmm. is almost cut in half. So it doesn't affect you that much. And it's funny because my buddy Dan Rutina, shout out to you. We call him the officer because mm-hmm. you can on the app, you can follow all these different players and make sure that they're posting. So he'll text you, did you post? Hey, you didn't post. So we call him Officer Dan. Shout out to Dan there. But anyway, he texts me, he goes, dude, you've been soft stepped. I said, what are you talking about? What is that? And if you go on
the- Am I on parole now? Like,
I'm basically on watch by the USGA. Yeah. So I go in. I look at the app and there's this little icon next to it. I click on it. It says you've been soft stepped. So I Google it and it basically says, in layman's terms, we think you are sandbagging. And I can guarantee you that is I did not do that. These are all honest scores. I just have not been playing well at all. So soft stepping, that's what it is. And well, I play yesterday with my father. At Blue Heron Pine, shot a 77. Today, I played the tips for the first time, and I shoot 77.
Yeah, yeah. And it was funny because after the front nine, you had gotten two strokes on the front nine or three?
So when we got up to the first, they were walking to the blue tees, and Dalton's like, wait, I thought we're tipping it out. Actually, Robbie, the sales director, he goes, I thought you guys were tipping it out.
I was going to say, quick back step to that. We had an audience on the first tee today. We had a very socially distanced audience today with club staff and everybody. It was hilarious, and they chirped us a little. When the two hometown guys walked up to the blue tees, they were a little ashamed of their own guys.
You know, obviously, you're a scratch golfer. Andy and Steve are playing at plus handicaps right now. So, I mean, these guys can play. I mean, these guys know golf. Here I am coming in at 7.6. Steve's like, how about this? What do you want to do? And I said, I don't care. Well, since we made the bet from the tips, let's play from the tips. He goes, all right, how about to make it fair, we'll give you what's your handicap? And I said, it's a 7.7. I got to look it up. He goes, all right, how about we just give you 7 strokes? We'll all play scratch, and we'll give you 7. He said, sure, that works. Let's tee it up. Play the tips. Par the first hole.
Mm-hmm.
Bogey the next second hole, which is the second hardest hole on the course. So I got a pop, actually be pushed. So anyway, long story short is I shoot 2 over on the front, and they were like, I think we need to reevaluate this handicap of yours.
Yeah, needless to say, Steve was not a happy camper. No. We had gotten him one up on the front because of kind of maybe one of those strokes I think helped. Yeah, yep. And then, you know, we ended up winning the last, I think, is what gave us the front nine. We won 9. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, walking to 10, the boys were not happy to say the least. And so we decided to go square up on the back.
Said that multiple times throughout the round, but it was funny. So I looked at another thing too. I mean, you were chirping at me too because we never really consulted on certain putts or same thing. I just looked at Steve and said, how about this? We'll keep the front nine the way it is, and we'll just, the way I'm playing pretty well, we'll just go all square straight up on the back nine. He concurred, and Dalton's sitting there ready to tee up. He goes, wait. You're not going to consult this with me?
I mean, I'm thinking, now, ladies and gentlemen, maybe you think a little differently than I do, but you're going to consult your partner before you just give away 3 strokes on the back nine when you're playing for a money match. Guess not. We just lost 3 strokes in a matter of a flick of a switch. Wasn't consulted, but, you know, it ended up in our favor.
Listen, I played well. I actually got myself, and I thought it was pretty fair.
You played great, man. Like I said, like we said earlier, the match was so good on the back nine, and we were square up at that point. You know, it was so much fun. Those guys were great sports the whole time too. You know, it was fun playing with two guys that could absolutely ball. Those guys are great players in their own right. And yeah, it just worked out in our favor. 1-0, enjoy the walk crew.
We played well.
We played well.
And one thing that's great, and one thing that's, I guess, a tip for anybody out there playing in two-man better ball match play situations, which we did not do, was blow up on the same hole.
Yeah, we ham and egged it today very well.
Yep, that's one thing that I think is crucial when you're playing two-man better ball situations is just don't mess up on the same hole and you'll be fine. And I think there was no one made worse than a bogey.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, whatever.
And it's funny. It's easier said than done. Yeah. No, don't mess up on the same hole. Like, oh, yeah, duh. Yeah. Like, yeah, okay.
I mean, there was times like I got nervous too. I think it was on 15. It was that short part. It was that short par four. And he said, well, what do I do here? I was like, driver's not to play. You can go three wood, which can be a little strong, but usually most guys play iron off the tee.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton pulls three wood and actually pushes it and basically looks like it's going OB.
I caught the first possible tree anyone could catch off that tee box to the right, and it just looked like it shot it dead right. Yep. So, yeah, I thought I was out.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there like, I need to get this one out there. And, you know, it was so hot out. I've been struggling with perspiration. Cut that.
Hey, yo.
sweating. I actually lost a little bit of grip in my right hand on the club, and I did not hit that great. And I'm like, whoa. And I mean, I was pulling, like, from the Tiger Phil match. I was just grinding out my grips with my towel just in my hands just to make sure I stayed dry because I, for some reason, a couple years ago, playing, you know, when playing in that heat, just hands start getting sweaty. That's one of my pet peeves. I just cannot stand slippery hands on the golf club because that's the only thing you're making connection with.
Yeah, anyway. No, I'm 100% agree.
So I'm like, oh, so my nerves were going a little bit. I'm like, great, I need to somehow – this might just be – now it's one against two plus handicap golfers. I'm like, crap. Luckily, we found Dalton's ball. I think we pushed that.
We did, yeah. I actually ended up having a putt for birdie out of all things, which is crazy enough.
That was fun. But, yeah, it's pretty wild when you come down this type of situation. And it was a grind. I'm telling you, it was definitely a grind. It was a big mental grind for me because I basically had to play absolutely lights out. And it was just – but it was just fun because I love that grind competition.
Yeah.
There's nothing that beats it, especially when you're playing two guys from your same club who are just 1-2 at the club.
Yeah, who you just know are sticks, who you just know are notoriously damn good players.
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got to sit there. And it's cool because you can learn off of them. And it's just like watching them play. It's cool to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool to watch guys like that play that well. And then you kind of just feed off of that. And then you're like, all right, well, I'm going to step up my game. And then it was just a true battle between the four of us. I mean, I think maybe one or two holes, someone like at least one of us kind of just said, you know what, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
But that was about it. I mean, we were all playing pretty solid golf and just grinding it out, moving out through the heat. I mean, we were going through bottles of sodas.
Yeah, soda pop. You know, we were staying hydrated, but
it did get steamy out there.
Yeah,
but it was one hell of a time, and we're definitely gonna have to make a trip down to Maryland.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's no doubt that we need a rematch. I think we're gonna have one. You know. Steve Barry, as he was pulling out of the parking lot, said, you know, we deserve another shot. And I think Andy said, you know, he could have hit a couple better shots down the stretch. So he wanted another shot too. So I think the boys want another crack at us.
I think so too. You know, Andy had a couple of bad shots. He had to work a little bit this morning, he was saying. So he's a little tired. I can see that coming down on the last stretch of holes. So yeah, I want to get Andy and Steve at 100%.
Yeah, we'll bring them down to the Eastern Shore, put them up in a hotel, tell them to kick their feet up. That way they have no excuse next time around.
Yeah, so that'd be a lot of fun to get them out there down south or just getting out there again.
Yeah, plenty of Jaworski courses up in this area to get them out to as well.
Maybe we'll do like Riverlands or something.
I'm in. I'm totally in. But, yeah, man, no, it was a lot of fun. And it kind of got my juices flowing because, like, you know, we dubbed this our match, like the match. But, you know, every time I walk down a fairway, like I envision myself at the match with Tiger and Phil. Like, let's get into that a little bit. I finally enjoyed watching a golf broadcast coverage of an exhibition.
That was, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And even if you go back and watch or go through like the Twitter world, golf Twitter, and even the non-golfers, they just love the way they did it. They let the players just take the mic, take the wheel, and just they were chirping back and forth. And I know a lot of people were saying that, you know, the way they did the pairings, you had Peyton and Tiger, and then you had Brady and Phil. Mm-hmm. Well, Brady and Tiger don't really say much. They kind of let their play do the talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were saying, okay, well, Peyton and Phil were going to do all the chirping. Well, there was a time all four of them were just at each other.
Back and forth. Yeah.
It was just awesome to see.
Can I low-key say that Charles Barkley needs to broadcast a lot more golf?
Him and JT. They want Barkley and JT to do it through the next
one. Absolutely phenomenal. Prices. Him and Brady going back and forth. First of all, Charles Barkley has no room to chirp anybody on their swing. Let's just be clear with that. But the way he was chirping Brady when Brady was hitting wayward shot after wayward shot, I could sit down and watch that all day long.
Brady struggled. I know every football fan was just pumped to see him struggle. It's crazy when you see like one of the greatest players of all time of a certain sport. It just shows how humbling golf can be.
Yeah.
Because he struggled, and he just did not look like the superstar that everyone knows he was, and it brought him back to like reality. But it was like, it's crazy. I'll be honest, I kind of like felt bad for the guy, but at the same time, it was like, you stink.
Yeah, you're one of the NFL's all-time greats, but boy, do you stink at golf. But I tell you what, it was funny. People were saying, you know, boy, I don't think Brady's had this much trouble on Sundays since college. You know, I mean, it's just absolutely hilarious to watch him kind of scuttle it around and then drop one on one of the later holes.
Oh, my gosh. So, while Charles Barkley was chirping in his ear during the entire time.
Yeah.
Because they had all the earpieces. And I'll go with that. That kind of – because I know Phil was getting frustrated, and I probably get frustrated. I mean, you got this pouring down rain, which, in my opinion, should have been a canceled event. But you have all this logistics that go into it that you were set up to play this mm-hmm. day. So, I mean, in any other day, if this was just a normal round with a bunch – like 150 to 200 golfers that you would normally have at a course – they would have shut the course down, obviously, but they had this event. You know, we have this pandemic going down. It's all for charity, which was great to see the money flowing in and all the pros and other celebs calling in saying, like, this person does this, I'll drop this. Mm-hmm. And if this person does that, I'll donate this amount. It was just awesome to see just all that. It was just crazy. I mean,
yeah, it was a sense of like, I mean, with the TaylorMade driving for relief match even, it wasn't the best broadcast, but you could see the entire world was watching. The entire sports world was watching because it's all the sports world had. But it was amplified when you put Tiger Woods in the center of it, when you put Phil Mickelson in the center of it, Tom Brady in the center of it. You had four of some of the greatest ones and twos in their respective sports going at it on the golf course when no other live sports are happening right now.
Boring, boring. I think that's what probably got bugged. I mean, let's face it, like you and I, and every other common man golfer, and even like the pros, they're besides like when the weather hits, you're playing and you're, as the saying is, you're a fair weather golfer. You're playing in good conditions. You don't go out and it's like pouring rain. You know what? Today I'm gonna go play 18 holes. So I think that kind of got to some of those players, especially mm-hmm. like Peyton, because he was like on and off with different articles of clothing.
How relatable was that? The amount of times you've just in a rain day when it goes from pouring down to drizzle to maybe a little warm and then back to pouring on and off and on and off.
One of the most frustrating games in the world is to, all right, how am I going to get myself comfortable with a clothing aspect, make sure I'm comfortable when I'm going to make swing with the golf ball?
Yeah, it was funny to see the greats struggle with it a little bit. Yeah.
It's always see because you always get that say, my dad says it all the time, is they look like us out there.
Yeah, yep.
Every single time.
And boy, did they ever.
Oh, man, because Brady, besides that, I don't know, what, 140-yard hole out?
Little zipper of a hole out, yeah.
That was just cool because he hit it, hit the green, and zipped. But the way it zipped, it also flowed with the break of the hole and just like snuck in there.
Yep.
And that was kind of cool. While his earpiece and microphone was
an absolute mess of a shot. Yeah. Now I want to get into that because I think you almost got there a little bit earlier, but like just the mic mic'd up part of it. I think the guys are struggling with a little bit to keep them on and keep them in their ears. You know, I think it needs to happen. I think mic'ing up the players needs to happen over and over again, even on tour, I think. I think they should start doing it. But, you know, what do you think? Are there better ways to do that? Is there like a Bluetooth option maybe? Like, we got to get the wires out of the way.
Yeah, I think down the stretch, there's definitely going to be a wireless aspect. I just don't think – I mean, it's 2020, and we're still wearing wired mics that are hooked up to earpieces. And, you know, it's like you got this big, I mean, almost remote-controlled size block of electronics clipped onto the back of your pants. And other these where they had like the earpieces that you see a lot of the shows and music artists where you can constantly communicate back and forth with the production aspect because they're allowing the players to hear what the announcers are saying because it was live chirping back and forth. So, I mean, even Phil was saying some of the time, I don't know if it was because of the rain too because he had electronics. I think he was getting static in his ear, and it was really annoying the living crap out of him. And that would annoy me too.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Trying to make golf swings and focus on a shot when I got like something nagging at my ear. So I think down the road, someone's going to come up with something. There's definitely got to be a simpler way to get more powered devices, but smaller in order to mic up these players. I know in the what we'd like to see with pre-COVID is mic up the caddies and get the banter between the two player that, but they definitely need to find a way to mic up these players for sure.
And I know they're going back to like these very heavy duty cameras and receivers and stuff like that. So I'm sure they have to be extremely high powered, and that's probably the reason for the wires and stuff like that. But I think for a all reality standpoint of if you want it to happen all the time, it's got to be wireless.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, they had two different types of electronics clipped to the back of their pants.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's weight, too. That's
weight. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That's weight added to you. So that's something that you're not normally used to.
I mean, just like say, like, all right, like give Michael Jordan a 360 dunk and now make him do a 360 dunk when he's got two wireless modems on or wired modems with an earpiece in his ear. Yeah. Like your motion doesn't act the same. Your body knows something's up.
Yeah. And almost, even though it's not, your subconscious or whatever tells you that you feel you're restricted. Let me tell you this. You do not want to feel restricted when you're swinging a golf ball.
Ever.
Ever.
That is. We can do that without wires, let alone with something in your ear.
I agree.
Yeah. No, it was cool, man. It was fun to see, you know, down the stretch, Mickelson kind of like cheering on Brady saying, come on, it ain't over, you know, like, all right, we can still get them. And I mean, they were what, three down at one point and brought it back to one, you know, they were walking up, I think 18 with a chance. So it was cool to see a match like that come down to the wire. I mean, obviously the TaylorMade match went into playoffs. And I mean, obviously you got two greats going out there, so they're going to play some great golf. But it was cool to see Peyton play some golf. It was cool to see Tom play, even though he struggled. And, you know, just get the guys out there. And, you know, man, I think we're so close to seeing golf back. I think June's going to see a lot of professional golf being played, whether it's with fans or not. I think we're going to see a lot of golf.
Listen, if you're going to do it without fans, definitely find a way to mic up the players. Because that's going to make the broadcasting that much better, because it's going to be – you're going to hear crickets out there. It's just –
oh, it's gonna be a snooze fest if they don't mic the players up.
And I think that's a good opportunity to find a better niche on where they can find better marketing for broadcasting golf. Because let's face it, and we've said it before, it's boring. And even Bubba Watson said it years before. He said watching golf is boring. And
I think, you know, not even just – there's a lot of pros that say that, you know, there's so many guys out there that say, yes, I play this sport. I'm not going to sit down and watch it. And that says a lot. You look at the greats of the game. They want to watch tape. They want to watch film. You know, like Barry Sanders would sit down and watch hours of film on football. Michael Jordan would sit and watch hours of tape with Phil Jackson on basketball. You don't see golfers watching hours. Now, granted, they probably watch a lot of their own swing, and it's a little bit different of a sport. But you don't see them sitting and watching the game like a lot of other sports can sit down and do.
Yeah, they're analyzing their swing and their swing path. Rather, they're not analyzing, hey, I'm going to go watch this round at the Masters and see, all right, well, I hit it here. Did I mishit it, or was I off on aiming?
I know one guy who did.
Who is that?
Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
He talks about it all the time. If you go watch some of his older videos, how he used to, as a kid, as a teenager, would sit and watch old rounds of Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, of the greats walking their way around Augusta. You want to wonder why he's got five green jackets now? There's a reason for it. Because he knew how the greats used to play the game and how they used to play it at Augusta. So, I mean, it's just little things like that that I think, you know, it gets to the knots of if you really want to be great, you might sit down and watch it.
And it's another thing, not only on the pros aspect of trying to improve their game, but for the AMs, like you and Mick. I mean, we can watch that. And if you were to take broadcasting to where let's get the caddy player interaction, you can learn so much. From these, I mean, these are the elite. These are the elite of the elite of golf. You can learn so much that where you can actually take bits and pieces, either from their mental game or just their probably mainly course management, and take that to your own course. And I can guarantee you that if they did that, you would probably see a couple of strokes off your game just by learning from some of the greats.
100%. Some of the best moments that always go viral in golf, it seems like, are the player caddy conversations, and we don't get enough of them by far. And I think, you know, we talked about this right as COVID hit. I think it's a great time to reassess, like you said as well, the state of our the broadcast in golf, and say, where can we improve and where can we create a niche? Because not too many other sports are miking up players. And if they are, it's very seldom and few and far between. I think it's easy to do in golf. Like you said, once caddies come back, prime opportunity for it. And we saw it with the match. We saw it with both matches. It's practical. It can happen.
You can just attach everything to the bag. As long as the bag's near them,
yeah,
you can pick them up. I mean, you don't even have to mic up anybody. You just clip it to the bag. You're good to go.
Yep. Now, you might get a little fan adage in there every once in a while when you don't want to, but I think we get the gist, you know, and that's where the gold moments come from that I think lie within the game that just the broadcast fails to capture, is those BSing moments between player and caddy, between player and player even. You know, I think sometimes now this is very few and far between, the on-course mics catch a player conversing with another player going down the fairway or something, and it's gold. I mean, a lot of these conversations, especially in major championship play, are talking about, well, how would you play it? What experiences do you have when guys, you know, when like kind of lesser known guys get paired up with the Tony Finaus and the guys that have been down the major stretches on Sundays, the Dustin Johnsons, they ask these guys for advice, and I'd love to hear what they're saying.
Yeah, and you see these pros out there in any sport, and you know, you put them on a pedestal because, you know, they're great at what they do. They are one of the top performers of their profession. And then you go out and you hear that, you know, they share the same interests in you, or they had the same experience as you, where that's what it's all about. It's coming down to like, oh, I actually relate with this. Like Phil Mickelson, say, like, I don't know, said something or went out to eat. It was like, yeah, you know, I waited for like an hour to get a table. Well, we do that. It lowers them down off this pedestal and kind of puts you in more relation with them, to where you can relate with the player a little bit better and kind of get for who they are. And that's one of the coolest things.
That creates fans. That right there creates long-lasting fanhood within a game that reaches outside of the golf course. It starts to create fans that are looking to get into the game if they aren't already in the game. It creates people seeking out the game off the golf course as well, interacting with the PGA Tour, interacting with the players off the golf course. And that's where you build fanhood around a sport.
Yep. And it's basically coming down to like what Janella said was, you know, I'm trying to build an experience. I want to come out with a good experience so I can come back.
Yep.
And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to build this great experience. And there's a bunch of ways to do it. And once you build that experience, you know, and it's a good experience, you're going to want to do it again.
For sure.
So, which if you go into a, you know, this private club or on this resort, or you're going on this trip with your buddies and you have a great experience, you're like, oh, let's plan the next one. All right, you have a great experience with a broadcast on a PGA Tour event with different things being added to it, miking up players. You're like, man, that was a great experience. I can't wait to watch the next tournament.
Yep.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's just about getting repeat customers, as they say. And whether it's a PGA Tour event or anything, it's just about, like you said, creating that lasting experience. And I'm excited to see them hopefully you know, build on that and keep expanding, because the Twitterverse went wild. The whole golf community went wild. People who haven't even watched golf before tuned in because of Tiger Woods being there and went wild of how good and fun it was. We need more exhibitions. I think the last 3 weeks proved that.
I think we do. You got to throw those in there. I know they're trying to get a match 3.0 with the Jordan and Michael Jordan. That is, there's a lot of Jordans out there. MJ and Tiger versus who was it? Oh crap! I think it was like Jordan Spieth and Steph Curry or something.
I'd like to see that. Oh yeah, the Under Armour guys, yeah. Spieth and Curry. Yep. Yeah, I'd be down for that. Guys.
Yeah, and then JT on the mic again.
Boy, he's a riot. Boy, on the mic.
We know his when he retires from golf, what he's doing.
Yeah, I'll see him inside the ropes in his retirement party. Yeah, that's for sure. Awesome. Yeah, he killed it, man. I absolutely loved his just kind of like jovial comments in there. He was quick on the whip to know what to say. I mean, obviously he's a player. He knows how it goes. He knows what those guys are kind of going through out there. It was fun to have him inside the ropes.
Yeah, and it was cool to hear from how his experience knowing Phil and knowing Tiger and what they would do when he picked their brains and how they hit certain shots. And then they would go over and be like, hey, Phil, how would you hit this shot? And then Phil goes into detail, because we all know Phil is very analytical and very detailed. That I think it was JT, because or Amanda Bailey, one of the two, asked him how he would handle a chip shot. And he was explaining, like, one part of the grass was greener than the other because the green was actually it was towards them, and then the others was the green was away from them. And he said, well, you want to chip it here because you need the ball to do that, but it's got to go through in grain. So there was just so much detail to it. It blew my mind, but that's the stuff we need, because you can learn from them on that aspect.
100%. There's a reason these guys are elite, because they are thinking about all that, and they pick those little things up without thinking about it. Like, he's not purposely running that all through his mind. It's just in his check set. It's like you and me when I'm lining up a ball to putt and checking, like, to make sure it's online. Phil's checking those kind of things inherently. He's not doing it just because, oh, I can't forget to check the green. Yep. It's just like that's what he does now. It's so in his brain. It's fluid. Yeah. So it's fun to see, and I can't wait to hopefully get more mic'd up personalities and more celebrities play. And I think it brings a whole new, you know, you bring the NBA fanhood into the golf scene now, and you know, the just that kind of conglomerate. The NBA has one of, I think, the most loyal, biggest fan bases in the world. You know, they're so global, and I think the golf game's getting there. So to bring those guys in and to kind of, you know, we saw the NFL interact with this past match. I think it's a great step the PGA Tour is moving towards, is getting those fanhoods involved in the game too.
Yeah, it's always fun to see where you bring, you know, you bring greats, where you take them out of their comfort zone of the sport that they don't play and put them into a golf scenario. And like I said before, you know, that becomes really relatable. But it's awesome to see, because you're like, well, you know what? You keep hearing about these players and about, oh, you know, Michael Jordan's a 1.2 index. Get that guy on the course. I want to see. Listen, I watched The Last Dance. Bulls fan like my entire life. Huge MJ fan. I'll admit it. Big Scottie Pippen fan and all that. And like going back from watching The Last Dance and watching the golf footage. I know MJ's a lot older now, but man, I thought he had a pretty sick swing.
I tell you what, prime Bulls run, MJ had a silky swing.
I would like to see him move around the course. And it's kind of cool to see, let's take these pros and take them out of their comfort zone and put them on the golf course. Because let's face it, golf's tough. We've said it before.
Yep.
And let's see what we can do.
Over under, how many cigars MJ smoke in an 18 charity match?
I would say he smoked six, three on the front, three on the back.
I was going to take that, and maybe a seventh for good measure if they're under some pressure.
On the range.
Okay, you got me there. Yeah, I like that. That's a solid number. Now I like that. Now, one more thing I wanted to, you know, touch on, you mentioned it a little earlier, was the mental mastermind class we're in with Colby Wallace. Yeah, we mentioned him a lot today, and I wanted to get into that. You know, shout out to Colby. We had him on the show previously, it's an awesome – I mean, it was just our first week. We were in this past week, and it's been really cool to sit down and kind of approach the game from a mental side of things. I think so many people don't do that or don't give it thought or say, oh yeah, I should visualize. And then that's where the conversation ends. And that's kind of what we got into a little bit in that first class was visualization and really like being practical with your visualization, not saying, all right, I'm going to go out and make every perfect shot and go shoot like 14 under. It was saying, let's be real. Let's be practical about our skill set, our ability out there and be practical in what we can shoot and visualize how we get around the course. You know, I think that helped on some of your putts today, seeing the line, seeing the putt go in. How did that class kind of maybe affect your round today?
I would say, obviously, very well. It was only the first class, but I did take some big pieces out of there, and there are some stuff that I did before that I didn't realize is pretty crucial, especially going into a match or into a tournament round. The night before, how are you feeling? Mm-hmm. Are you anxious? Are you excited? Are you confident? And a lot of the times I'm going in confident until I get on the course and then I have like one bad hole and then it's clubs are going on eBay and I'm texting everybody how much I want to quit. But the visualizing is huge because like he said, he did one of the cool things was doing it with basketball, three different sets of teams that, you know, you had one team that went in and just did free throws for hours on hours on hours, and then you had a team that did nothing for a week, and then you mm-hmm. had a team that just told them to visualize taking free throws, and the team that increased the most percentage on making more free throws were the ones that visualized, and it's crazy to see that where you just take a step back. Visualize, you know, I got this 12-footer, a little slider, and you visualize the line and you visualize the putt rolling in. You know, now you're putting positive thoughts into your head. You're more than likely, mm-hmm. and you're going to have a better outcome of actually making that putt. And there were times where it actually happened because I said it out loud. I was like, I'm making this.
Yeah,
and
then, Colby, shout out to you, man. Your name was mentioned and dropped before a lot of made putts today. So excited to keep going in that class. Guys, if you want to check that out too, feel free to reach out to him on Instagram. Or I believe Colby Wallace has a website as well. You can just, you know, obviously Google search that and find him there. I think he's got it linked on his Instagram, Colby Wallets. He's still taking people for that mental mastermind class. And guys, I can say we've only been through one, and I think it's got us completely reassessing in a good way the way we approach the golf course and the things we do off the course that sets us up for success on the course. So excited to keep going down the path of that mental mastermind class and hopefully, you know, get us both under par.
Yes, that would be great.
So excited to check it out, guys. You know, we are, like I said, on the back porch at Dante Frederico's residence, and he was gracious enough to have me up and play his course today. So it's been a lot of fun. If you guys want to check us out after this podcast, feel free to leave us a review and subscribe and a rating on iTunes. That would mean the world. And then just go check us out on Instagram or Twitter at Enjoy the Walk Pod and enjoythewalkpod.com. You guys can check out all the merch we release. We got the golf hats, we got the dad hats with our shields and stuff like that. So we're always kind of trying to release a couple things, you know, a month just to keep it fresh for you guys and get you guys new merch, but always with the Enjoy the Walk stuff kind of tied back into it. So thanks for listening, guys. And as always, get out there, carry your clubs like we did all 18 today. And all four of us, man, it was a great sight to see. And
before we go, I did another chirp by Steve. He asked if I was riding today.
Yeah, I did. I did get some insider information. I'm going to have to have the Bureau of Walking Carts investigate Dante Frederico. There might be some fraud in the works. I don't know. I'm going to have to do some insider investigation here because word on the street, he might have rode a couple times. And I don't know. We're going to have to look into him. You know, for the brand. That's it for this week, guys. Get out there, carry your clubs, and enjoy the walk.
That's the stuff. One shot at a time.